Welcome to episode 197 of the Men Who Save Football, the Dundalk FC Fancast. This is a post-match reaction to what looks to be a pivotal game, a 3-2 home win over UCD. Guys, the mood among fans will be celebratory. Those 3 points which we needed sort of more or less bring us to within, well, a confident touching distance of being champions and getting that automatic promotion. But it wasn't all smooth sailing, was it?
We very rarely praise a referee on this podcast, and I'm not going to do it this time either, because one of the most shocking refereeing decisions that I think we've ever seen in the history of Oriel Park. The only big difference for us was that it went in our favour. I think if this had been the other way, like, probably the referee would have needed an armed escort, right, as far as the motorway, because, I mean, I'm sure we'll cover, right, the progression of the game, right, UCD going 1-0 up, but what got us back into it, you know, was I think Declan McDade plays a series of 1-2s with people, gets into the box, right, really great jinking run, but defender comes across, and I would say a superb last-ditch tackle, right, to flick the ball away, and the referee immediately blows the whistle and points at the spot. I can understand most, you know, of the dozen UCD fans being absolutely apoplectic at this. Like, it was a really shocking decision. But yeah, I think that got us back in the game. And from there, you know, I wouldn't say it was a game that we ever dominated, right? I think UCD were excellent on the ball. Like, they dominated possession and passing. And I don't know if we have any statistics at hand, right? But I think they were definitely, like, dominant in that dimension. But I think, as you said to me on Friday night, Ken, that, you know, they were dominant without having superior individual talent. And I think that's where we shone. So Arubi in particular, right, stuck away that penalty, and then early in the second half stuck away another from a more straightforward sort of foul that happened. And, you know, sort of shortly afterwards, I think, you know, a really excellent goal from Owen Kenny. So some really quick thinking, you know, down the left-hand side, we did a throw-in, went to Daryl Horgan. He hooks it across the box, and Kenny comes off the right-hand side, makes his way past, you know, two markers, beats them to the ball, flicked header into the net. You know, I think the best goal of the night by any measure. And, you know, I think a real striker's goal too. Like, that was excellent. But we're Dundalk FC. We're not going to make it that easy, right? So having already had, you know, one, I don't know if we'd call it like a fairly straightforward error for their opening goal. But second goal, I think Vinny Leonard gives away like the cheapest of free kicks down the left-hand side. It's whipped in. Yet again, we have a Dundalk FC defence not able to defend a set piece, like just like in Longford last week. Ball's in the back of the net, and it's 3-2. And that left us with a very nervy finish for the last 20 minutes. There was lots of us on the edge of our seats and like some crazy goings on, right? Daryl Horgan almost in a fist fight with, you know, a UCD player, you know, sort of gesturing to the crowd, you know, about how psyched up he was, you know, for the match. Amazing stuff, but we held on, and an incredibly valuable 3 points.
Yeah, when, like, when we look back, hopefully in a few weeks when we look back on all this and we are automatically promoted, this game, as you said, would absolutely be pivotal. But I mean, the start was crazy, because coming off the Longford game, going into the context of this, was like the Longford game. The more I think about it, the more it has kind of gestated over the week. That result gets worse and worse and worse, and the performance gets worse and worse and worse. Win that Longford game, and oh my God, you know, we are just sailing. So as the week went on, I was like, Jesus Christ, that is like what? Like, the wheels are not coming off. The wheels are blown off the machine. So then you go into Friday night, UCD, we've said this on the podcast, have been no pushovers, you know, and have given us enough trouble over the recent years. So, and they are in contention for a playoff spot. So they're absolutely, you know, weren't to be, you know, kind of dismissed. But I still think Dundalk are where we are for a reason. And you'd like to think maybe the Kerry and Longford results were some kind of weird blip, and we were talking about, let's get back to that halcyon days of August when we were knocking 6-7 goals past people. But the story, I think, of the last 7 days has just been real defensive wobbles. Because if you think about Arubi and Kenny and all these players, I think they, you know, obviously we were aided and abetted by the referee, but, you know, given a normal maybe start to the half, they would have come good. But Dundalk, as we have done many times, shot ourselves in the foot. The UCD goal, like, stunned silence in Oriel Park was like I could not believe it. The atmosphere went from fairly kind of, you know, boisterous and let's get up for it to, oh my God, pin drop stuff when they scored. And, you know, we're always saying we don't like to single out players. I think the defence currently is going through a somewhat of a crisis. I think Peter Cherry should have done better with the UCD goal. It's not like, I will say that UCD, it's a really good chance they carved out from both the initial pass to the player running into the box. It's a pretty tight angle, but there's a whole bunch of white shirts and Peter Cherry. I mean, you know, the commentator, I rewatched the highlights and the commentators are saying possibly Cherry assumed the player was going to, the UCD player was going to knock it across the box. That's kind of one of the explanations for maybe why he didn't react to it the way he did. But I still, looking back on it, the angle is so tight. There's so many defenders. Cherry doesn't have to do too much to keep it out. But anyway, it goes in. Oriel Park, stunned silence. And you start to go, after that Longford game, you start to think, oh my God. I would say that if you are Kilduff, I mean, it must be on the fans' mind. It was definitely on the fans' mind. If you're Kilduff or you're a player, I wonder what psychologically starts to happen. Given the Longford loss, you're at home, you are within touching distance of winning the league, and then you're 1-0 behind, and you're like, oh my God. That really, really could have spiraled out of control. But we had divine intervention in the form of a pretty, I agree with Martin, a pretty shocking refereeing decision. I mean, there's sometimes you see refereeing decisions, and I would be, you know, somewhat partisan. I would say sometimes more up in the stand. Martin's a little bit more level-headed. But I think everyone was like, sometimes you're like, no, no. And you're like, no, no, that the referee was right there, or the referee was wrong. But in that penalty decision, I mean, that is just an excellent tackle by the defender. It wasn't just a bad decision. I just think it is just like really, you know, an affront to what was an excellent defensive tackle. But let's bring out all the cliches. Teams that win leagues, you know, they come back from behind, they wallop some teams, they fight dirty, and that old cliche, they get a bit of luck. Over a whole season, all manner of things help clubs, and I think you get a bit of luck. That was luck, or I don't know what you'd call it, but Aruby slots away the penalty really good, and then, you know, we're back into the game. For the second, I mean, I'd say, yeah, we definitely didn't dominate the game, but I think we were the more threatening. I don't think UCD really threatened our goal as much as we threatened theirs. I would say then for the second penalty, I think it's definitely a penalty. It's Stonewall. So I don't, no complaints there. And then when it went 3-1, I thought, okay, normality has been restored to the universe. This is going to be it. Let's just see it out 3-1. Lovely goal by Owen Kenny, who I think is really, really blossoming lately. Doing some just lovely goals, lovely movement, really upward. I think he is, you know, he's really silenced a lot of critics, myself included, you know, from the start of the season, where I just thought, you know, I mean, we were talking at the start of the season, remember us, I think this could be a make or break season for someone like Owen Kenny, which is if he can't really turn it on in the first division, then would you cut your losses with him? But I think he's really, really starting to show his worth. And that goal was evidence of it. So it's 3-1. You think we have settled the ship. We've had a little bit of luck, but we've also carved out our own luck. And I think we were rightfully ahead at this stage. And of course, it's Dundalk FC. So whenever UCD got, when UCD got that free kick, that set piece, I think we actually looked at each other at one stage and went, oh, here we go. Because Dundalk just have this amazing ability recently to mess these situations up. The story of their two goals, I just think, is a defence absolutely not at the races. I don't know what has happened. We talked about, you know, chopping and changing of people, different combinations, but they've shipped a lot of goals in the last few weeks. From being fairly solid back in August to shipping a lot of goals. And the last, 20 minutes were horrific. Not that UCD were particularly all over us. It wasn't really like one of those backs of the walls performances we've seen. But it's just Dundalk FC. If it had been 3-3, I would have said, yeah, absolutely, of course. they get a set piece or something like that. Ball just sails in. You would have shrugged your shoulders and walked out of Royal Park. But we held on. Massive, massive, massive result. Really hard to quantify it because it was some horrible defending by us. An absolute godsend of a penalty. Life is strange. Life is meaningless. There's no narrative here. We just won a game and we edged ever slightly closer.
Much to unpack in your comments there, and I can confirm to listeners that neither of you are UCD alumni, so there is no weird hidden agenda in your, shall I say, exuberant criticism of the ref there. I think when I saw the decision in the stand and I sat beside you, I thought that's a soft one. I actually look back at it in the replay. It seems a little less soft, but you can see the ball clearly moves off perpendicular to the goal. Does the defender get contact? Perhaps. Bit of a Zapruder film, you can see what you want in it. But I just for to be fair and balanced, I'm going to say that I think that was a good decision by the referee. There could have been contact, and it was certainly good for Dundalk FC. Whether it was, valid, I don't know, but it was certainly good. We did need a bit of bailing out at that point in the game because Dundalk actually opened quite strongly. We seemed to be on the front foot in the first 20 minutes. And then, when you're a little bit brittle on confidence, the worst thing possible happens. Yeah, we know that we have to arrest this inconsistency if we want to see this campaign out. And UCD just go down a channel and, with very little ingenuity, have a shot on goal, which just seems to go straight through the keeper and you're on the back foot. So, when that penalty comes along, whatever your misgivings about the validity of decision, I'm sure you were relieved as I was to actually see it come our way and to see Urubi get us back into the game. Now, you talked about statistics, Martin. I can give you some. We had 35% possession in that game last night. The UCD had obviously 65. We had 279 completed passes. They had 471. And I think we all know, without looking at any statistics, that UCD dominated the last 20 minutes of that game and basically laid siege to the Dundalk goal. And we were pretty much, we played, the statistics would look like we were playing away from home when we were actually at home. And I don't know whether that worked in our favour or against us. But it was a kind of fascinating game from that point of view. Plenty of drama, more than we would have wished for. But to see it out, even when you have played not terribly well, get those 3 points, just a massive sense of relief. Now, here's another stat for you. We still have the best defence in the league. But I think we all realise now that a lot of the work that has us where we are was done in the first series of games. And then we had that rally in August when we went on a kind of high scoring run, which gives us now a cushion of not only 6 points, but a cushion of 6 goals as well. So I think after Friday, most people will say Dundalk FC, by whatever means and whatever level of comprehensiveness, they have now done enough to probably wrap the league up with a win over at Lone, which is a team that are the bottom of the table. I know we didn't beat them in at Lone last time. Bottom of the table without a win since May. You go there, you get a win, and then you wrap it up against Finn Harps and just Cove becomes a party. But there was enough there perhaps to give us a little bit of concern. Our last trip to the Midlands, not great. But I think most fans will think we've now kind of done enough, and it's really unthinkable that we'll mess it up from this position. However, in the first half, it really could have went either way. And you bring me to another point, which is the introduction of Daryl Horgan. We didn't really see or expect to see Daryl Horgan back in a white jersey this season, but apparently there's a few players who are carrying injuries and they were thrown in, O'Keefe being one. Horgan came on, and I think Horgan was part of that goal glut in August that really propelled us into this kind of comfortable position we're in now. He made a huge impact, and as well as contributing an assist for Kenny's goal, and generally kind of upping the intensity of Dundalk's play, he seemed to channel Patrick Hoban towards that climactic battle, where suddenly we haven't seen Daryl Horgan probably ever as this fire-breathing, tenacious kind of up and at him combative figure, but he was certainly fired up. And I'm just wondering, like, was Patrick Hoban kind of doing a Luke Skywalker like astral projection to, channel into Daryl Horgan in that moment? Because it seemed to be that fighting spirit that we really needed. Great to see him back. Great for him to be able to make such a decisive contribution. Just a kind of question: have you ever seen Daryl Horgan that fired up? And do you think, like I do, that he was a decisive factor in turning that game around from what could have been a defeat to a win?
Yeah, I don't know. We might have to circle around his family and friends and find out if there's anything else that gets him fired up to that extent. Maybe have him watch some of the movies that you do, Ken. I've found like some torment after, hours being pushed through some oddball director or something like that. But whatever it was, I don't know if it was something that was said in the dressing room or just like the frustration of having been on the sidelines for a few weeks. Or maybe having won us a free kick, right, in injury time when our backs were to the wall. But whatever it was, like the fire within certainly, came without. And as you pointed out as well, like his contribution for the goal was excellent as well. Before his injury, he was having a real impact on positively, right, on our goal scoring form, and himself was a top scorer for the team at the time. So, you can see what he is bringing to the team still at this stage, right? He's got a quality that you just don't see elsewhere at this level. But I think, like, I'm most worried about what I think is the lack of legs in the Dundalk midfield, right? I think he helped address that a little bit in the second half. But we started with a midfield, I think, of Parashev, Dervin, and Groom. Groom withdrawn at halftime, not for the first time either, right? I think we've seen him make way like very early on several times. I don't know if he's somebody who's managing an injury or something like that, but it seems at this stage that the idea of getting 90 minutes out of Harry Groom is just not a thing at the moment. I think Parashev and Dervin probably both played the 90 minutes, although like they looked extremely leggy in the second half, right? And I think there was a point in time where Arubi had dropped back into, the sort of number 10 role, but they were having fierce difficulty figuring out who they were picking up, right? At UCD, I think the thing I would credit them with most, like not only their sort of dedication to a passing game, but their running off the ball was really exceptional, right? Every time somebody looked up for a pass, there was somebody on. And we had a lot of difficulty, right, trying to pick up men for that first pass and stuff like that. And they played through our lines very easily at times. And so, I am worried that I will never, I think, stand here and criticize A. Dervin's attitude because it's like I think, sort of unsurpassed in the rest of the team at the moment, right? He is the sort of the soul of that midfield. But there's only so much you can ask of him, right? When the people around him are not tracking and not picking up players and stuff like that and are confused about how they're supposed to be marking, he is the backstop, for sort of filling in the gaps and stuff like that. But there's only so much he can do when, there's, three, four times a minute he's having to turn and, sort of chase somebody else down and win the ball back. And honestly, UCD looked fitter, stronger, better on the ball, better off the ball. And really only except for that individual quality, right? I think that was the only reason we went on to win that game. But, Horgan came in. I'm trying to think who else came on in the midfield in the second half, but like, really, we looked out on our feet. And so I thought in the first few weeks of the season, right, we saw that a couple of times where we seemed to, fade particularly badly. We thought, maybe it's just early doors. But at this stage of the season, I think like that's a pretty big concern.
Yeah, I think well, definitely Horgan made a massive difference. I think we've seen a bit of that this season. I think he's really been him and Dervin often. I've seen him a few times. Turning to the crowd, especially at the end, trying to get the crowd hyped up. And I think Horgan has been somewhat talismanic as the most senior player, probably the most skilled player, and that kind of legendary status from teams of yore. But I really, he looked really, really fired up on Friday. Almost too fired up at one moment when there was that. Although I do think the UCD player was the aggressor. Daryl and the UCD player had words, and the referee booked both of them. And the UCD player continued to berate Daryl in front of the referee, which was bizarre. But Horgan wasn't backing down either, which is kind of great to see. And as you said, the contribution to the goal. I mean, he was, so. Directly and indirectly, part of that goal glut in August, that it was great to see him contribute the same on Friday, and really, really, really him and Kenny linked up beautifully for that goal. So I think he's been really important. It's interesting now what Martin was saying about, you know, the team not having legs and at this end part of the season. One thing we said at the start of the season when we saw the squad in total, we were like, oof, can this squad make it to the end of the season? And, you know, a lot of very young players on the bench. Now, interestingly, for instance, Sean Spate, I thought, was really good on Friday and had a really good chance in the first half. So a lot of those players have made a good name for themselves. Is it a case where both physically and psychologically this team is just running out of juice? Now, you'd say they're running out of juice a little bit too early because we have not crossed the line yet. I don't know. I think a lot has been asked of this team. Interesting, you know, that we're still the best defence, given what I would say is not a very good defence. Well, lately, I think if you think about, you know, Kerry, Longford and Friday night, if that is the best defence in the league, that is, what does that say about the league? But anyway, we won't get too negative like that. But I think that I think you definitely can see this is a team which is possibly beginning to run out of juice, and we just need a little bit more out of them. Because as you said, like the first 20 minutes, I thought like Dundalk were on the upper, had the upper hand. I think we were the better team. I think we were carving out more chances. I think could have done a lot better, obviously, but we were building into it, and we just got sucker punched by that goal. And you know, we got kind of a bit of luck to get back into it. But definitely in the second half, you could see UCD look sharper, which is a little bit worrying. I mean, we only need a little bit more out of them, and then, you know, the whole team can disband and we'll see what happens next. But yeah, definitely UCD looked fresher throughout the whole game. But introduction of someone like Darren Horgan really, really added just that little bit of juice to get us over the line. And what we need in the coming weeks is just a little bit more of that. But it is slightly worrying because, as you said, we didn't have the best trip to Athlone previously. They are bottom, we are top. We should be simple enough. It should be straightforward. But you just worry, as I said, have the legs gone? And I think we have enough in the tank to get us there. But yeah, I think like teams looking fresher than us, more upward than us, is a bit of concern over the last 7-8 days.
Well, I mean, you talk about there being a lot of young players in the team, which is true. And against most teams, I would say that like could be a decisive factor. But UCD are maybe the exception, right? Where they are made up almost exclusively of students, you know, plus Ronan Finn, who is maybe a student, but a mature student at least. So, you know, I don't think we can claim that there's a huge age gap between there. Although I said, you know, if we took out Peter Cherry and maybe Daryl Horgan out of the side, there's a good chance that our average age was probably younger even than the UCB side that we faced at the same time, right? It is a very young team. But yeah, like I think at this stage of the season, I'm just struggling to like look at that midfield and see like who is the, you know, that, you know, sort of 90 plus minutes player who is going to have the legs to battle, you know, sort of from the start to the finish, no matter what. And I don't know, it's a bit of a question right now.
Yeah, because like we said it, and I don't think we're being too harsh. It has been a long campaign. Kieran Kilduff was very frank in his interviews post-game. He said some players are playing through injuries. He's relying on players who are 16, 17 years of age to do 90 minutes in key roles. And in the past, we haven't really had that profile of player. I mean, if somebody was playing for Dundalk and they were in their teens and a local, usually they were well protected. You were only expected to come on in a substitute's role, maybe when the game was settling down or whatever. We've leaned heavily on very young players this season. And I think Kilduff talked, the phrase he used in an interview with Jerry Malone was, we're nowhere near the Kenny era team, and we know that. But this is a first division team. And I think he was trying to manage expectations, perhaps, that, you know, the likes of ourselves as fans would have, that we must win the first division. We must get back to the big time. Well, we've no absolute right to do that. And these guys are still top of the table. So whatever about the misgivings of the manner of those wins, to be getting the wins with a profile of player, which includes players that young and inexperienced, still an achievement. So I suppose you have to acknowledge that. However, if we turn to some of the comments that came into us on Twitter after the game. We posted Dundalk see off UCD a UCD rally to win three priceless points and take a major step towards promotion with the help of two spot kicks. With Cove playing Bray next, will we be champions by next Friday? Winning at Lone really means that something miraculous has to happen for Cove to overhaul us, which would be us losing and losing to them by like a 7-goal-plus margin, more or less. However, Shane McGurk came in and said, massive 3 points. The difference a bit of experience makes, especially when Horgan came on and Dervin was excellent. Robbie Morton says, we have won it in a Lone before. Hopefully we can repeat. Hugh McArdle says, and this is one for you, gentlemen. Recalling a previous discussion on your episode, is it true that some podcast members were heard giving Ronan Finn just a little stick? Now, I don't know. We'll come back to that one. E. Collins came in and said, subbing on a half-injured Horgan definitely made the difference for the team, especially in the closing minutes as he rallied the team. Asking again, if Dundalk makes it to the Premiers, what players from this side are you taking with you? Two questions for you to discuss. And Simon Canning came in and said, Cove beating a resurgent Finn Harps 4-1 last night will face a gone off the boil Bray at home. Can't see Bray getting anything down in St Colman's Park. We need a win away next week and push for the title at home v Finn Harps. Oh, there's still a few permutations and combinations there. First of all, the Ronan Finn question. I always like to be super pessimistic before a game, just so that we can brace ourselves for whatever happens. And I was painting the nightmare scenario to you guys that this could be a draw, with Ronan Finn getting a headed equaliser in injury time. And when UCD got that final free kick, it looked as if that premonition, made in jest, might actually come true. However, I've been on record. Ronan Finn was imperious last night, came on, looked as elegant and silky a player as he ever did. And the kind of thing about it was, much of his UCD compatriots did as well. Whenever UCD were in possession, it was noticeable they had a handy pass left and right. They were always looked in space and at leisure in their possession. They were able to build attacks with really intricate football. And he was there kind of doing his Ronan Finn stuff. I certainly didn't give him any stick, did you?
I think it was announced that there were 1,600 people at the game. It'd be hard to tell who would have given abuse out of 1,600 people. So it wouldn't be for me to say. I mean, I heard, but who actually did it? It'd be impossible to tell.
Well, let me bring you a counterpoint, Ken, where I will say that I thought the UCD midfield were excellent before he came on, and Adam Verdon was, maybe one of the best players on the pitch. And I think, if anything, he might have weakened that midfield a little bit.
There you are. That's so damning faint praise for Ronan Finn. Still a legend of the golden era in my book. Yeah, so moving on to the next, slightly more difficult question. If you thought that one was bad, here's another one for you. The question from E. Collins, if Dundalk make it to the Premier, what players from this side are you taking with you? Now, I mean, we have kind of contemplated this question all season. And it's a tricky one because it very much depends on what our resources are. Is it fair to say that if we are to have a realistic chance of surviving in the Premier Division, that we're kind of going to need significant strengthening in every department from goalkeeper, defence, midfield, and attack? Not only because of the current resources that we have, but also the fact that we've lost a few players and may yet lose more to clubs overseas.
I mean, I think this team, if they play to their absolute maximum, would be competitive, sort of in the Premier Division. But I think you have the slightest off day, right? I think they slip below their maximum and they will struggle, right? And I think seeing the likes of Cork City, go up last year, going to come straight back down. Like, if anything, they actually dispensed with all of their squad and went with a completely new squad for the Premier Division. That didn't work out. And I don't think Dundalk SC should do that either. So we're already taking, I think, Ed Irvine, Leo Gaxa, and I think Daryl Horgan is under contract for next year as well. So, like, those three are already on board. Like, from the rest, I would say Owen Kenny, like, definitely looks like in the last, 10 weeks or so, has really started to find his place in the team. And I think there's more to come from him, right, before he reaches his peak. I think the same is definitely true for Vinnie Leonard as well, right? He, I think, had an excellent start to the season, and I think the last few weeks the defense has struggled a little bit, but still you know, what a season it's been for him. And I think we're a long way from him reaching his peak, right? There's a lot more to come there. After that, I'm not sure. I want to praise this team, right? As Ruby said already, like the amount that this team is delivering relative to, you know, the resources that they've had at the start of the season is really exceptional, right? And so that deserves to be praised. But I think I also want to try and answer the question honestly as well and say that, like, the Premier Division is going to be an unforgiving league, right? And I don't think there's a whole lot of room for sentiment. I'm not sure I would take anybody else other than those names.
Yeah, I would agree with the names being taken. I mean, we said it on this pod. We had a similar conversation a few weeks ago, and we said something like Aidan Durbin, I think, is really growing into a real talismanic role in the centre of the park. I would definitely take Horgan back. I think he's got more to offer. Leo Gaxa has signed up again. 100% agree. I think Owen Kenny is really starting to blossom. And we said this, I'm going to repeat this again. I think it was a make or break year for him. And I think he struggled at the start of the season. And I think he's really put a bunch of critics, balanced a bunch of critics. So absolutely agree with all of that. The interesting thing about that question now is, if you asked that question 6 weeks ago or even 5 weeks ago, it'd be like, yeah, take them all. You know, we're barnstorming through teams. Now, it was, you know, it was in first division wins. But I think we were looking really like we were clicking into a team that could do it at both ends. The problem when asking that question now is, after the past 2 weeks, is I think, and this is no shade to any of those players, but do you know when we used to say, even when Dundalk were in the mid-2010s at their best, and then we would go play a European side, maybe more 2017, 2018. We were really cocky and confident going into summer, and you'd be playing Bows, whatever. And then we'd play a European team, not an amazingly stellar European team, and we'd really get shown up. They'd cut through us, whereas Bows the week before didn't, or something like that. Or you'd be playing Waterford, and you'd be like, you deal with a Waterford chance, or you like, you know, they fluff their lines. But we play a team in Europe, not a particularly strong team in Europe over the last decade, and they punish you instantly. So we've seen that with Dundalk, even when we were in the Premier Division, is that you play a team, you get used to a certain level, and you think, oh, we're Dundalk FC. Then you play a team of a different standard, and they cut straight to you. My worry would be that we've seen this Dundalk defence really wilt recently in the face of Longford and Kerry. Send them up into the Premier Division, where again, notch, bring everything up a notch. Way, as Martin said, way less forgiving. I think they would be in deep, deep trouble. So right now, based on what we've seen over the last 3 weeks, it would be inadvisable to take a lot of those players into the first division, into the Premier Division, just because we've seen them really wilt in the face of teams much lower than us in the table. But that said, I think you're always kind of remembering the last few games, and we're kind of forgetting some really wonderful play we've seen over the year. But if it was right now, based on what we've seen, yeah, it would be a struggle to retain some of those players. Because they're struggling in the first division. I mean, that's a fact. And the Premier Division will be much tougher. Yeah, it's a tough one to answer at the moment, because of the struggles we're seeing.
I mean, even Aidan Durbin, who, like, I'm a huge fan of, you know, like I said, the character that he brings to this team is incredible. But we've seen him play Premier Division football, right, in the last couple of seasons. And compared to other midfielders in the division, he just hasn't got the pace over the first 5 yards, right, to do things. And he's, you know, a scrapper and somebody who will, you know, work to retrieve the ball. And he's got quality on the ball. But when it comes to a 50-50 with another Premier Division midfielder, right, over that first 5 yards, he will not win the race. And that's one of those things that, like, I think one of the best players, right, in our squad right now is going to struggle at Premier Division level. And so I don't think there's a whole lot of room for sentimentality.
Like, ultimately, it's going to be determined by a bigger question, which is, what is the budget? Which opens up the whole, how healthy is the club off the field of play? We're nearly there as regards the return to the Premier Division. So the next question is, what resources do we have to keep us there? Now, I suppose the mission will be a little bit different. I mean, last time we recall going up, we had a major turnover in both management team and squad. And this was the John Gill team that won promotion and was kind of let go wholesale. And then the Sean Connor, shall we say, dirty dozen that was assembled and got us, I think, a third place finish. Now, the league position was great. The antics of that squad was perhaps less edifying. And normally you kind of don't like to see players who you've become bonded to and have done their best and have achieved being summarily let go en masse. But I certainly would say this. It would be near suicidal to think that this team, this squad, has a high probability of getting a mid-table finish. It needs to be supplemented. It needs to be strengthened. And I think you could say where it needs to be strengthened. But Peter Cherry in his after-match interview mentioned retirement. I don't know if Peter Cherry has the appetite, desire to go for another season in the Premier Division. Him and Minogue have kind of interchanged basically because at moments, either there's been an injury or the keeper have lost form. I think that's an area that we could certainly strengthen with an established, experienced Premier Division keeper, somebody, of that caliber, because it's such a fundamental position. It's the bedrock of everything else you do. It gives the defence confidence or it robs them of it. That's basically, we should be in the market for a keeper. We should also be in the market for a centre half because Leonard is great. Big fan of his. We've talked Mayo up a lot. Other players have filled in that position. I think Sean McHale is just a very, very, very talented player, but if he isn't going to be available to you due to recurring injuries, that perhaps is a luxury that you can't afford. So you might need somebody who can play more games for you and maybe come in with a little bit more experience to ensure that not too much is asked of Maioa or Leonard at this higher standard. So that's another spine of the team. And I would continue right throughout. You've praised Ade Irvine. We can't fault his spirit. But you can see him perhaps being outmaneuvered by some of those more fluid midfields that you're going to be meeting. We probably need somebody who can strengthen the middle of the field. We look around at other players again who've got talent and they might be good passers. But again, they are going to be asked to do more at that higher level. We just can't rely, perhaps, or we can't expect people to be transformed to be qualitatively better than they have been as we've seen them before. And Arubi hit double figures. He's sort of been the player that won that he won that jersey, he won that kind of leading the line role up front. Certainly worth hanging around, worth keeping him. But probably need strengthening there as well. If you're going to survive in the Premier Division, you need to try and find a regular goal scorer. They're pretty rare. They don't come along all that often. But basically, I would just say spine of the team throughout. We should be targeting every single position from the one to the six to right through the midfield to centre forward, along with keeping your promising young players. That might give you a shot of going up. And I think most Dundalk fans, like, we always want to be competing for Europe or whatever else, and we certainly take that. But I think given where we're coming from, given the resources we might have available, just staying clear of relegation will be enough for us for next season.
I mean, there's always the chance that another team is going to have a bit of a mare, right? So I think there's a lot of nervousness at the moment in Galway and in Waterford about what's happening there. Sligo, I guess, are only just above the relegation zone as well, but like a win last night, I think, has pulled them a little bit clear. And so I think there's probably, let's be honest, I think we'd all be satisfied if we went back up, given the financial, sort of situation of the club as well. If we finished, sort of seventh or eighth next season and stayed in the Premier Division, like that would be success. But for that to happen, I think you need another two clubs below you, right, to have had some kind of nightmare season, right, to do it, or unexpectedly fantastic season from us. But yeah, I look around and like Drogheda seem to have plenty of money at the moment. Don't seem to be, the sort of regular basement struggles that they had been, sort of 2, 3 years ago. I think with Cork going down, you're looking at the rest of the teams and say, like, who are going to be those two teams? Unless it's Galway or Waterford, right above that, everybody looks very strong, very secure. and I don't think they've too much to worry about. The only thing I would say, like, is that this does make other problems as well. Like, we're at the moment assuming that only one team is going to come up from the first division this year. Like, obviously, there will still be a playoff. I think if it's Waterford or Galway, they might struggle against the likes of Cove. And I think for Cove themselves as well, like, they really need to come up this season, right? If you consider what happens to Cove generally when Cork City are in the first division, Cork will just have the bigger budget. They will hoover up the players, right, in that part of the country. And Cove will be left like fighting over the scraps, particularly if Waterford go down as well, right? That will leave, I think, four teams in Munster, right? All looking for that. So I think, like, there's almost a little bit of pressure on Cove to try to make it this year, because I think the next season or two, there's no guarantees whatsoever. And from what we've seen of UCD, you might fancy UCD's chances in the playoffs the way that they're playing at the moment too.
Yeah, just a glance at the Premier League table. I mean, Cork look dead and buried, but above them, then Waterford, we know, have had instability, but access to serious resources. Galway also access to serious resources. Sligo, less so perhaps, doing more of a grassroots fundraising model. But we've seen Sligo this year in the cup tie, and they did seem to be, again, for a team that is, not clear of relegation. I think when we were analysing that game, we thought game and all as Dundalk were and gave it plenty of effort and had moments when they might have kind of got ahead in that game. Sligo seemed to be a level above us. They seemed to have the craft and the guile to win that game comfortably at the end of the day. Now, if they're one of the clubs whose Premiership survival is still in doubt, it just gives you a good insight into the work that needs to be done in the close season to strengthen our squad and give us a chance of staying in the top flight.
And of course, all of this is, well, we've been alluding to the looming specter of the club's finances. I mean, it's great at the moment, I think, just to concentrate on on-field matters. And after last year, to have gotten to the cusp of October without a crisis, is pretty good going. We believe the manager is being paid each week. We believe the players are being paid. But there's a conversation to be had at the end of the season, I think. About what the club does in the interim. We've had at least one episode where we spoke about, I suppose, the tension between fans and ownership. I wonder, will that be exacerbated in the off season? Because you're going to want to see, we've spelled it out here. The club has to strengthen. I think I agree by the way, Ken. I think finishing, seventh or eighth next season would be an absolute win, really just build up that base. But to do that squad needs to be strengthened. For the squad needs to be strengthened, the club's finances need to improve. For the club's finances need to be improved, I think there needs to be an injection of funds. Where that comes from, I think, is going to be discussion. You'd like to think that moves are being made for investment, but we were told last year. Now, I'm not casting aspersions on the current ownership. It's unfair to project what happened with the previous ownership onto the new one. But I think the worry is what we saw last year just totally blindsided everyone. And I would say almost certainly the club needs investment to survive. I hope moves are being made to do that. I hope the club is a more attractive prospect as a Premier Division club. So that's why I think getting up in one season was so important. The ownership has done a good job so far. I mean, I'm constantly, the one which is super cynical about every time someone Dundalk owns Dundalk. But you also have to give kudos where it is. We've talked about the tensions, and we would prefer better communication. We would prefer better openness with the fans. But currently, we are on track to go up in one season, and we haven't heard of any, major crises. So it's a job well done so far. There's a big conversation to be had about what happens in the off season, I think.
Speaking of investors, did either of you happen to come upon the article or featuring our former owner, Mr. Brian Ainscough, who said that all that tension and stress and anxiety that you all felt last year about the club being vaporized, you need not have worried. This was, in fact, a masterful Trumpian negotiating ploy to precipitate a deal in double quick time to salvage the club. Did you happen to read that article, and are you persuaded that this was the art of the deal.
I think it is the easiest thing in the world to claim that afterwards. You know, if you pull off a daring suicide move and you get away with it. Oh, yeah, I meant that. It's just too easy to say that in hindsight. That was way too dangerous of a move. And I don't know. It's impossible to comment on because anyone can claim something like that afterwards. Aha, I meant that. What a, you know, it was the most cunning, you know, business move in history. Ah, if that goes wrong, yeah. But even if it was intentional, it's such an insane risk to take us right to the brink, to the almost literal 11th hour. I don't buy it.
Yeah, I mean, there's just, I don't think this makes Brian Ainscough look in a better light in any way, shape or form either, right? I think many a Dundalk fan was horrified by Brian Ainscough, like almost, as Rory said, vaporizing the club. And the idea that he would, you know, pretend to vaporize the club, you know, just for his own, I guess, financial benefit, doesn't make that any better at all, right? I don't feel any more sympathetic to Brian Ainscough as a result. In fact, worse. Like, I didn't think it was possible to feel worse, but here we are. And none of the creditors still would have been paid. He talked about would have had to take the club into scarp, you know, immediately would have meant points deduction, like all of the other stuff that the current management, you know, whatever your own opinion about them, is like very shrewdly and successfully avoided, right? So I think good riddance to Brian Ainscough.
So as a charm offensive, you just found it offensive and not very persuasive. Well, look, all of those dim and distant days of the crisis are now far behind us. And here we find ourselves on the verge of a glorious return to the top flight. So we don't need to worry about that. We can go deep on the structure of the club, perhaps at the end of the season. It would be interesting to hear about what the plans are and what the budget might be, although that's never truly kind of revealed in detail. But it would be desirable for Kieran Kilduff to be given a significant war chest so that he can go out and begin to maybe make those improvements that we need to have a realistic chance of staying up. What you might like to see in addition to that is, as you know, we do have the two supporters groups who seem to be, shall we say, not yet aligned with the club itself. And given what we're going to be facing next season, whatever reconciliation needs to happen between the 1903 and the trust and the club, it would be good if everybody could get sort of in rhythm and rowing in the same direction, because we're kind of going to need a probably expanded and, dare I say, moneyed boardroom. And we're going to see a lot more, we're going to have to see a lot more, I suppose, fan-based activity, in that we've seen crowds steadily drop away, even as a successful campaign has kind of come into its final furlong. We haven't seen, somebody said, it's always the little things at the club to tell you where we are. We haven't seen really any fundraisers per se that I noticed. The idea of a commemoration for the 95 championship winning team has kind of come and gone. We don't really have any announcement of an end of season event or player of the year night yet. So, you know, there seems to be still a certain amount of dormantness about the actual growing of the club and doing anything beyond match night. Now, that all requires volunteers who are willing to do it, and, you know, I wouldn't point the finger at anybody and saying they're not doing enough. But I mean, the absence of that does put us at a little bit of a competitive advantage. We always use Sligo as a model. I mean, most of their fundraising for the year kind of comes from that sort of activity. And it just doesn't seem to be happening. And as well as that, little things like, I think if you go on the website and you try to access the club shop, it's sort of been unavailable if you want to purchase a jersey or anything else for quite some time. All these little things sort of do add up to kind of put you at a disadvantage, and next season you're not going to have the luxury of not being on your game right across the wider dimensions of what it is to be a football club rather than a football team.
Well, I would say one thing about the fan fundraising is, at the moment, any efforts to hand funds to the club or offer funds to the club appear to be unwanted. So that, I mean, it the I would say that kind of kills any impetus to do things like that. I mean, it's already hard to get people to volunteer. We know, and again, it's not throwing shade on anyone. It's a universal thing. It's hard to get to do it, but if it's felt like at the moment, and sometimes you're repeatedly told, and sometimes fan money is straight up turned down apparently this season. Attempts to give money to the club for various reasons are turned down. Why would anyone bother at the moment?
Well, that's fair enough, but that's probably a sign of the fact that a reconciliation that needs to happen if we're to get to where we need to go hasn't happened yet. And again, I don't know, you can echo your favorite peacemaker, whoever that might be, but if we aren't all in alignment, it just makes life a lot more difficult. And if we end up coming straight back down next season, there's no point looking around then and asking why did we not have the fundraiser, which might have given us that extra squad player, which might have made the difference in that game that got us the 3 points and kept us up. However, that's probably one for more of the long term.
Well, I think we're all operating on the assumption that we're going to be playing Premier Division football, next year. And that's not just the commentary on the results on the pitch. But I think, will we get a Premier Division license? Right? That is another question that really has to be answered. We know that from, last year, there was lots of questions about was that going to happen, if we stayed up? Did the pitch have to be replaced beforehand? Like, we understood that we had a government grant available, but we were going to have to cough up, half a million euros to replace it first and then claim that back afterwards. And it didn't seem like anybody had the finances available to do that last year. There was also the floodlights, right? Which I think some improvements have been made, right, in the meantime, but is it up to a sufficient standard? And various other things, right? Even around the club as well. Like, we know that there's supposedly ownership tests and, various things like this about like sustaining the playing budget and stuff like that. Like, is this club going to be granted a Premier Division license next year? I think that is a big open question at the moment. And yeah, that worries me a bit.
There is always trouble ahead. It is Dundalk FC after all. But right now, things are looking pretty good. And we'll go on to it alone next Friday, where we could all but secure our Premier Division return. And hopefully, then, make it absolutely certain on Friday, everybody who's already booked to go down to Cove can, start the party as soon as they get on the train. But for now, that was episode 197 of The Men Who Save Football. I'd like to thank everybody who contributed on Twitter. I'd like to thank Martin Mullen and Rory Murphy for joining me for this discussion, and we'll be back to talk to you after the Athlone game.
Let's hear for the man who saved the face of football. The face of football. The face of football.